enough.
Well, I think the president should cease and desist from the name-calling and the insults of all these people. It really doesn't add to anything. He should focus on what the issue is here.
Former Team USA gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar was back in court in Eaton County, Michigan today for a final sentencing hearing. Nassar addressed the court.
It's impossible to convey the depth and breadth of how sorry I am to each and every one involved. Divisions of your testimonies will forever be present in my thoughts.
He was handed a 125-year sentence by the judge in today's case. U.S. market trading begins as leading indices have been down.
The Fed is likely going to have to keep raising interest rates to make sure the economy doesn't overheat.
There's Christine Romans. The Dow down 246 points. I'm John Trout.
I get older, losing my hair many years from now. Will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair. 3 minutes after 10 o'clock, our temperature in Kimland is, I don't know. Mark Skipper is my guest this morning, and we're chronologically going through his lifetime. And once again, he is the owner-operator of a thing called MAS Office Cleaners. He started it 5 years ago, and he has approximately 50 clients, and his goal is to have 100 clients, and he's totally independent and actually does the work himself, as well as having people that are considered part-timers, up to 8 of them at one time or at this time. And when I met you, I said, man, that guy knows how to dress. I mean, you look cool. I mean, you had a top coat on, a suit and vest, white shirt, tie, and a cool hat. And you presented yourself very well. I thought, I wonder if the guy will even talk to me, because I was dressed in an old jacket and all that. So I was glad that you were conversive.
Well, you know, I have to give a lot of the way I dress that credit to my mother. I don't know if you remember back in the 60s, 70s, there was a line of clothing called Granimals, where you could pick a shirt. It'll have a giraffe on it. You pick a pair of pants, has a giraffe, and you mash them together. Where my mother always liked to really dress my sister and I in really nice clothes, suits, those kinds of things. And it just kind of rubbed off on me. So throughout my entire time of growing up to adulthood, I have really enjoyed clothing.
Cool. Do you ever watch The Shark?
I have seen it a few times.
Okay. There's a guy on there that's one of the sharks. I can't remember his name, but he has a clothing company.
Yes.
And I really like him.
Uh-huh.
He comes off really good. We got you born in some place, but you end up in Detroit. And then you get to Columbus, where you finish your high school years. Tell me about your high school years. That's always a lot of fun to go down memory lane.
Yeah, I went to Northland High School.
Okay.
And it was an interesting experience because, unlike many of other students that were there at the time, my mother was a teacher at the school.
Oh, cool.
So I saw her up and down the halls multiple times during the course of the day. I had to stay on my toes to make sure that I was doing the right things, because if I did something that wasn't correct, my mother would always know about it before I had a chance to see her, and she would be ready to ask me questions about it. But Northland was a great, great experience.
Now, was that a suburban school or right in Detroit?
It was actually in the city of Columbus.
I'm getting myself mixed up here. By the way, Columbus, Ohio has some beautiful museums. And they are more sophisticated than people really realize if they haven't been there. Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay. So you're at Northland High School. Now, did you get involved in extracurricular activities?
There were a couple of things that I got involved in. One of the things that I picked up when I lived in Detroit was I was really into comic books. So from looking at the comic book pages, I started trying to see if I could draw the characters that were in the book. So I developed a decent skill of drawing. So I was in the art club when I was in high school. I also ran track 2 years while I was in high school. Ran the mile and the half mile. And one of the biggest things for me, I was a part of the 2 mile relay where each person runs a quarter of a mile, and we broke the school record. Unfortunately, it didn't last too long, but still we broke the school record. So I was excited about that.
Now, one of the things, and you may have already said it, but one of the things I asked my guests that participated in sports, I know anyone that played sports remembers one game or one play or one out or one trip or a fall. And one guy was telling the story of what happened when they lost a big game. And what's your one moment that you'll never forget, or two if you have them?
I have two. One was winning, breaking the school record for the 2 mile relay. That's the first one. The second one, I wish I probably could forget, and it was the very first race of the half mile race that I participated in. And we all lined up, the gun went off, and I took off like a rabbit. Well, the half mile is not a sprint. And I guess somebody forgot to tell me that, or I forgot that it wasn't a sprint. And I'm running, and I haven't even made it to the quarter mark of the race. And I look back, and I see that I am at least half the track in front of everybody. So I'm really excited. And then all of a sudden, my legs start getting heavier. My shoulders feel like they're getting lowered to the ground. And what happened to me is what they call in sports, the bear jumped on my back. And one by one, the runners start whizzing by me. One, two, three, four runners. And then the next thing I know, I'm looking at the back of everyone's jersey as they pass me during the race. So I finished it, but I barely was able to walk across the finish line.
The bear got on your back.
The bear jumped on my back and wouldn't let me go.
In the marathons, they call it the wall, I suppose.
Yeah, they call it the wall. So I thought I would never live that down, but I survived.
Is there a videotape of that?
Thank God, no.
Okay.
No.
Were you in choir?
I was not in choir. I can't sing.
Really?
Oh, no. Everyone tells me, don't do that. No, stop. Don't do that.
Yeah. Now, your mom being a teacher and your dad having a college education.
Both, yeah.
I suppose that you and your sister were informed by your parents that you will be going to college, and you better get the grades to get in.
It's funny that you said it, because when I look back, it's almost just something you do. It was just an expectation. There was never a conversation saying you will go to college. We just assumed we were going to go to college. We knew that the opportunities would be better for you if you have a college degree than if you did not. One of the things my parents would tell us is a college degree will say to an employer is that you can finish something. So we just assumed that we would always go to college.
And now nowadays it takes 5 or 6 years.
if not longer.
Yeah. Now, so you're off to college. Which college did you choose? And were you recruited? And were there many that you wanted to at least visit the campus?
There were only two colleges that I had put down to apply to and go to. And the one college I wanted to go to was the Ohio State University. So that's where I went to school.
Oh. Did you feel lonely when you first got there in regards to the size of that campus?
Yes. At the time, Ohio State, I believe, was the top three as far as the population of a university. Very, very big school. But the school did a pretty good job of helping freshmen to acclimate to the size of the campus. Most of our classes were all congregated together in the same part of the campus. So by the time you got to your second year, you became familiar with how to use the bus system. Because Ohio State was like a little city within a city.
Yeah.
You know, fire department, police department, hospital. It was just a humongous campus.
It could be intimidating.
Could be very intimidating. You know, Ohio State probably was larger than a number of cities in the state of Ohio. But it was a great place to go to school, you know, all the enthusiasm around the quality sports that were there. Great programs at the university, lots of opportunity to get involved in a variety of activities. Just was a great school.
Did you go to any of the football games?
I went to a few of the football games.
What was that like?
Just people are just, well, in Columbus in general, they are just so enthusiastic about the Ohio State Buckeyes. You can walk into a flower shop in Columbus. You can walk into a gas station. It doesn't matter. If there's a retail store, they're selling something related to the Ohio State University, whether it's the football team or the basketball team. That city is just so excited about having the university there. When we moved there, Columbus was smaller than both Cleveland and Cincinnati. Today is now the largest city in the state, and I'm sure some of it has to do with the fact that Ohio State University is there and it's attracting companies to move there and people to move there.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that. That's interesting. And Ohio is a relatively small state size-wise, in the middle, let's say.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm not sure what the population of the state is, but Columbus is the capital of the state, and Columbus now has over 1 million people that are in the city of Columbus.
What was the, when you were a kid going to college there, what was the main business in regards? Was it tires or like Detroit's known for cars?
Sure. You know, and the city that was really known for tires in the state of Ohio was Akron. So you've heard of Firestone, all located there. So the big industry in Columbus, Ohio, Ohio State University, insurance. There's a big insurance company there. What is it? North.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So insurance was one of the biggest companies that was there.
Okay, so what did you major in?
I majored in art education. When I first started school there, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to study, and I looked at what did I really have a passion for. And it happened to be, as I had shared with you, I love to draw. So I started out as an art major there, then eventually went into art education, where degree provided me an opportunity if I wanted to go and teach art. But I decided not to do that and went a totally different direction once I graduated.
What discipline did you like in art in regards to, I assume, painting, etc.?
Good question. I thought the whole college experience was an exciting experience. Here's a whole building that was nothing but people that were studying art, whether it was painting or whether it was charcoal, drawing, sculpture. My specialty was charcoal.
Okay.
And I did a lot of portraits is what I did primarily. Yes.
You didn't do the fruit on the table?
We did the fruit. We did the fruit in our classes. Just a lot like some of the things you see on TV shows when people are going through art classes. That's what it was like.
Did you do nude?
Yep. We had models come in. And once again, you're thinking we're teenagers, and it's like, this is a different experience for us. And so we all had the big easels, and we're drawing and painting on the easel. It was just a really fun and different experience.
Did you save any of your charcoals or oils?
My parents have some of the drawings that I did. Well, one is actually on the wall, because when we moved to Columbus, Ohio, I had a walk-in closet. I'm surprised my parents allowed me to do this, but I drew a picture on the wall, which is still there today.
Your parents still live there?
My mother passed away last year, but my dad still lives in the same home that we moved into when we moved to Columbus, Ohio.
Your mom would have been relatively young.
Yes, my mom passed away, happens to be on my birthday, August the 14th of last year, and she was 74 years old.
Oh, boy. Sad.
Yeah.
My wife's birthday is August 18th.
Oh.
Yeah.
So she's a Leo.
Yeah. Whatever she is, she's great. I love her. that was a year ago, and you and your sister, and did you have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles?
Yes. We come from a very big family. My mother was the youngest of 18 kids. Yes, one
wow.
of 18, and it was a blended family. It was a blended family, but her mother and father, she was the youngest of 11 kids. So when my grandfather, when he passed away in 1976, he had over 100 grandkids.
Wow.
So just to give you an idea as far as the size of our family, it's pretty big. And that's, once again, that's just my mom's side of the family, not my father's. He also comes from a big family. He's the oldest of 8 kids.
My goodness. Now, that all started in Arkansas?
His family started in the Mississippi area, Clarksdale, Cleveland, Mississippi. And my mother, yes, in the Arkansas.
Well,
state of Arkansas.
Their parents, your grandparents, must have been very proud of your dad.
I think they were.
Yeah.
In fact, all of his siblings, all of them, graduated from college.
Wow.
And most of them have advanced degrees.
Wow.
All of his siblings were teachers. Okay. It was interesting. He's the only one that, when he retired, was not a teacher. He did teach for about a year or so and decided he didn't like it, and then got out of the teaching. But all the rest are either teachers today or have retired from teaching.
Wow, that's quite an accomplishment from a family out of Arkansas in your grandfather years.
Yes, my father's dad was a preacher, and he had 3 churches down in the Mississippi area and in Clarksdale, Cleveland, and there was one other city that he had a church. And he would rotate to the different churches over the course of the month and preach the service. And he and my grandmother, and she was a cook for one of the schools in Clarksdale, they did a great job of emphasizing education to the kids.
Now, you were born, what, 64?
1964, yes.
I like that, 64.
That is a great year, isn't it?
Okay, now... This is Black History Month, right?
It is.
And you must have some stories that your grandfather particularly, maybe even your father, what it was like in 1964 when Martin Luther King was doing his thing. Did they share stories with you?
Well, unfortunately, my grandfather passed away pretty early in my life, so I don't remember too much about my grandfather. But I would hear different stories from my dad, just what it was like growing up down in Clarksdale as a teenager, then as a young adult. And in spite of some of the challenges that they had, he had a fantastic childhood, and he still keeps in contact with some of the friends that he had from during that time. We go back to Clarksdale as a family, you know, every few years, and it's fun to see how things have changed since that time, how different it looks from when it was when we were younger.
Did you ever have a idea of becoming a pastor?
No, but let me tell you, as I said, my grandfather was a pastor, and I think probably everyone would always say this, but whenever they would see me with my grandfather, oh, are you going to be a little pastor yourself as well? You're going to be a little preacher, aren't you? And people would say those kinds of things, but no, I've never had a desire to be a preacher. That has to be such a tough thing to do, is to be a pastor of a church. When you think about all the families and the personalities and all the challenges that people go through in their lives, you're there to help them to get through those and to provide them help and understanding how God's word can help them live the kinds of lives he wants them to lead. I have a lot of respect for pastors of churches. I'm very impressed in their ability to communicate. And that's one of the things when I am very attracted to people that are able to communicate in such a way to motivate and inspire people to do great things. And people that are able to use stories, just looking at everyday life things that happen and somehow making into a point, a lesson from it. And that's one of the things I've always been just really mesmerized, that pastors seem to do that so easily. They'll take the little thing that just happened yesterday, and all of a sudden, that becomes an entire sermon. So, no, I've never thought about being a preacher, but I would love to develop those skills, those speaking skills.
We have 18 or 19 churches here in Northfield, and plus the ministerial folks at Carleton College and St. Olaf College. And we are a haven for retired ministers.
Hmm.
We have a lot of them that retire here in Northfield from wherever they're at. And a lot of it is because they graduated from St. Olaf or Carleton. Moving on, and we got to move. You graduate, you get your degree in what?
Art education.
And so what are you going to do?
That was the question I asked myself too. Okay, yeah. Now what am I going to do? Well, there was a Boy Scout of America administrative office right around the corner from our home. So as I was looking at potential places to work, that was one of the places I stopped in. I was just curious about what types of career opportunities that they had. Stopped in, sat down with one of the executives there, and thought, wow, this would be an interesting job to have. I went through their interview process, I got accepted, and I was transferred on my first job to Muncie,
Indiana. Okay.
Yeah.
Muncie,
Indiana.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind that this is a guy who was petrified of standing up and making presentations in front of people. And let me, first of all, share. Speaking in front of people is one of the top fears that most people have. They say that many people would prefer to die before they stand up and speak. So I was one of those people. So the first job I got with the Boy Scouts, I had to stand up in front of groups and groups of parents and present to them why it would be of their benefit for their sons to be in the scouting program. So I had to make presentations all the time. So, which is a little crazy for a person that doesn't like to stand up and speak in front.
So they recruited you, or no, they didn't. You dropped in, but your first job is to go out and recruit.
Correct.
And sell the Boy Scout program. That wasn't difficult. I mean, maybe you had the fear, but as far as selling the Boy Scouts, that I would assume most people accepted the idea of having their son in the Boy Scouts.
You're absolutely correct. You can walk into almost any room with a group of people and you ask the question, who was in scouting or was connected to scouting? In most cases, at least half of that room will raise their hands. If there were men, they were in the scouting program. Their sons were in the program. They may have been a leader. Their wives or their moms may have been leaders. Somebody is connected. Almost half of the people in that room always will be connected to scouting.
In my honor, I will do my best to protect God and my country. Did I get that right?
Hey, you did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
You did a fantastic job.
28 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. So you're in Muncie with the program for the Boy Scouts. Where did you go from there?
So I was in Muncie for about a year, year and a half. And I received an opportunity to move to Indianapolis, which was about a little less than an hour away from Muncie, for a broader responsibility with the scouting program. I had a territory that was in the northern part of the metro. You may remember Lawrence, Castleton.
Yeah.
All of those areas were part of my, what we call, scouting district.
Sure.
And my role was to, one, recruit volunteers to serve as leaders in the program, to work with business people in the area to raise financial support for the scouting program, do training, market the program, and recruit kids to join.
Were you in there when all the controversy came up in regards to the Boy Scouts and religion, I believe, was one of it, and the gay community?
I
remember when...
It seems like that had gone on for quite some time. So, yeah, while I was in the program, those were always challenges. We were being challenged at the time based upon our leadership criteria of who could be leaders and who could not be leaders. So the organization itself had gone through a lot of challenges because it really stuck to and held to a lot of traditional values.
Yeah.
And there were, I mean, there just were different individuals, different groups that were not comfortable with an organization that stood for those.
Did you ever go to the Jamboree?
I did. I went to one Jamboree. It was in Virginia. And it was probably within the last couple of years of when I worked for the organization. It was something just to see just a sea of kids and parents just having a great time. Great experience.
Where did you go from the Boy Scouts?
From the Boy Scouts. So I was in Indianapolis for about seven years.
And did you ever drive around the circle?
I did. You know, that's a real cool city, just how they have there on Meridian Street, all these war monuments that are going, and then, as you said, the circle.
But you're bringing back memories.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun place. In fact, when I worked for the Boy Scouts, we did this fundraising event where we'd have scouts out there during lunchtime, and they would be making hamburgers and hot dogs as a fundraiser, and you'd see business people coming out and grabbing it. And that circle is just a really unique location in the city.
Okay, now, was there a woman in your life at any point?
There was. I've been married, and I got married in 96. And when I moved here, and we have a 17-year-old daughter.
Oh, good for you!
Who is preparing to go to college?
And what did you choose as the name?
Her name is Kennedy. Her name is Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Yeah, like the president.
First name is Kennedy.
Yes.
Did anybody call her Ken?
I call her Ken sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if other people call her Ken or not. Sometimes she's called Ken, but primarily Kennedy.
Now, let me find out. Just yesterday was the Super Bowl. As you can see, I've got a Super Bowl ring on.
I see.
At a party I was at. Nice party from my friends. And now you were in Detroit. You were in Columbus. So you were in Indianapolis. So what I'm trying to do is find out, is it the Bengals? is it with the Browns? Or is it the Detroit Lions? Or is it the Indianapolis Colts? Or is it the Minnesota Vikings?
What I have to say is the Minnesota Vikings.
All right. All right.
You know, what else would I say, of course, is the Minnesota Vikings. You know, I've lived here longer than I've lived any place else. I've been here, as I said, 20-plus years. And I have to admit, I'm not the biggest spectator fan, but typically with things like Super Bowls, championship games, I'm right there excited. I would have loved for the Minnesota Vikings to have gone to the Super Bowl. That would have been a fantastic experience for, of course, for them, but for the city as a whole.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, was at a friend's house for the Super Bowl, but I recorded it at home. And when I get home this morning, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl. Because when you're watching with a bunch of people, you get into the game and all that, but there's conversation and a commercial that you might want to see. Have you seen the Budweiser commercial where they're filling cans of Budweiser with water, and then they send that over to Puerto Rico to help the victims of the... And I haven't seen the commercial, but when I was told about it, Budweiser put water in their can. And I guess they did that for Houston and other places. It just wasn't known.
Well, you know, Budweiser seems to have a long reputation of coming up with some great commercials for the Super Bowl.
We have a distributor right here in Northfield, Minnesota, College City Beverage, that has Budweiser. And they win all kinds of awards as distributors. So we're proud of that. 1033 on 1080 Radio. Once again, a reminder, my guest this morning is a young man named Mark Skipper. And Mark, if I hope I get this right. Okay. So you were in Indianapolis, and then where'd you go from Indianapolis?
Then I moved to Minnesota.
Okay. And what drew you to Minnesota?
It was a job opportunity. So I was working for the Boy Scouts at the time. I decided early on in my career with the Boy Scouts, fundraising was the track that I was going to take. So I came here for a fundraising position with the local Boy Scout Council.
Were they looking at a lot of people?
I assume that they were. Yeah. Yes. They were looking at a number of people. The organization is really such that, at least at the time, each Boy Scout Council, they would have an open position, and then they would look at who's already working for the organization, because all of the promotion happened from within as opposed to going outside of the organization. So typically, they would narrow it down pretty quick to three to five candidates for positions that they would have open.
So were you nervous when you went in? I mean, it's like, I got to get this job. Boy, I hope I get this job.
Well, I can tell you, I definitely wanted the job.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure if I was nervous. I had never been to Minnesota, Minneapolis before. I knew very little about the city. I knew, of course, about the sports that was there. But other than that, I thought it was going to be a very small city, in fact, and was really surprised when I got here and saw the skyline and what have you. And I guess I probably should have done more research before I came, but I was really pleased.
Had you heard of the Mega Mall? Mall of America?
I had. In fact, the company that developed the mall was based out of Indianapolis.
Oh.
I think it was Simon & Simon, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, I have a friend named Dick Simon.
Might be one of the...
No, he's into concrete work.
Oh, okay.
And he raises chickens.
Yeah.
I'm going to have him on my show pretty... Right now, he's in... being a concrete guy, he's in Florida, probably. But anyhow, you thought of Minnesota as an open landscape of snow and small buildings?
Yes. And when you talk about small buildings, I remember when I got picked up at the airport, and we were driving back to the Boy Scout office, and I think we were passing by Lake Calhoun.
Okay. Oop, it's a different name now.
It is a different name.
Yeah, Akaupa or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That lake.
It'll always be Lake Calhoun for me. I mean,
that lake.
I honor the Indian heritage and all that, but it's Lake Calhoun. It's like you changed your name. You know?
Right.
Exactly. What am I going to call you? Michael? No, you're Mark, period.
Exactly.
So when you learned about the job opportunity in Minnesota, you were being transferred, and you were going to take over as the main guy that runs the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, or Minnesota?
No, good question. Not yet. I was coming in as the second person responsible for the fundraising for the Boy Scout Council at the time.
Okay, well, how big is the council?
The council is no longer, it has merged with the St. Paul Boy Scout Council, which now makes it one of the largest, I believe, in the top three in size as far as the number of kids that are served in the program across the country.
So what kind of clients were you calling on to get funds?
Foundations. A lot of the, and as you know, Minneapolis, Minnesota, for a while, I believe it was right next to New York, or it was in the top 3 to 5 far as areas that have Fortune 500 companies. So it was spending time calling on foundations, but really most of it was meeting with individuals who were in the program, those that had kids in the program, people that just really believed in the values of what this program was teaching, meeting with those individuals, letting them know some of the things that we were doing, figuring out ways to connect them to the organization, and then at some point asking them to make a financial investment in the scouting program.
Well, I was chairman of the board of a nonprofit in St. Louis Park called the Pavlik Museum of Broadcasting, and we were able, because I had a connection, networking, to sit down and talk to, at that time, the president of Best Buy. Now, when you can sit in a room alone with the president of Best Buy and make a pitch, that's all through networking. Nice, nice guy. And anyhow, things changed, and we didn't complete the effort that we were trying to do. And you got to come back with everything on paper that shows it's all about education, education, education. Is that right? When
that's
you're
right.
out there soliciting?
Yes, yes. It's all about the importance that you, that the organization is making on young people, and education is a significant part of that. One of the things that you just said really brings something back to me when you said sitting down with the CEO of Best Buy. Scouting gave me the opportunity to meet and work with people that I more than likely would not have had the opportunity to do so if I had been doing anything else than working with the Boy Scouts at the time. Coming out of school, being in my mid-20s, sitting down, you know, even in Muncie, Indianapolis, sitting down with CEOs and chairmen of the largest companies in those cities. Why? Because I was affiliated with the organization that they love, the Boy Scouts of America. Same when I moved here to Minneapolis, I've had the opportunity to work with people that are really making some significant things happen in the big corporations around here in the Minnesota area. So the love of this program, so many people can relate and have such fantastic memories of the experiences that they had that they want to somehow figure out how they can help this organization allow kids of today to have those same types of experiences.
I'm going to tell a story. My mother worked at AMP Groceries, and eventually, right about this time, my parents split up, and we lived in a dump in Broad Ripple.
Okay.
And I was helping a kid study to be second class Boy Scout. And I was studying to be, a tenderfoot? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, tenderfoot is the very first,
and then,
first leg.
And then there's a first and a second?
First, second class, okay. And eagle. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I might have been, whatever I was studying for, I was late getting into the program.
Okay.
And so I completed my test in school. It was at night in school. I completed my test and passed it, so I went to look for the kid I was helping with the test, and I looked through the window, and I saw questions on the board, and I knew the answer to every one of those. So I went in and I asked the guy, because everybody else was busy doing the test. I said, I just passed first class or whatever it was, and I know the answers to this. Can I take the test and move right up and be in line with my fellow fourth graders or whatever it was? He said, sure, sit down. And I whizzed the test. And so now I was on equal footing with, well, I mentioned my mom worked at A&P. Some lady came through and handed a package to my mother. And she says, this is for Wayne. And my mom's busy, you know. She's, oh, okay. So she sets it aside, comes home, and said, Wayne, somebody gave you this package. I don't know who the lady was. She just came through and said, make sure Wayne gets this. And we opened it up, and it was a Boy Scout uniform.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, we couldn't afford one. You know, I had the kerchief. Oh, I'll never forget that as long as I live. I still have no idea who the woman was, but they knew that we couldn't afford a full uniform. And isn't that a nice story?
There are some fantastic people in this organization.
And, you know, by me telling that story just now is beneficial to those that are thinking about putting their sons into the Boy Scout effort.
I would highly, highly recommend it. It's kind of funny of my journey through scouting. So when I lived in Detroit, as I said, I was in the Cub Scout program all the way through. My first job for the next 12 years, I worked for the Boy Scouts. And then 4 years ago, I got recruited to be on the Boy Scout Council. That's in the metro area, which is called North Star Council, to be on their Boy Scout board. So now I've gone from being...
That's a big deal, right?
Once again, great people that are serving the scouting program. So went from being a kid in the program to working for them, and now being a volunteer with them has been a great experience. Some of the things that I've been exposed to because of the scouting program really has been some fun opportunities. One that I had, and this is as an adult, being a volunteer on the board with the Boy Scout Council. For about 5 years, they did this fundraiser that was called the Double Dog Dare. And what the Double Dog Dare was, people would have to go out, raise at least $1,000 in order to rappel down the outside of a 23-story building. So the first year I did it, and this was the inaugural year, it was the Ecolab building in St. Paul.
And Wabasha and 7th
Yes.
Street.
Yeah. Yes. So on the outside, walking down the building, for those of your listeners that may remember the Batman TV show, and they would show Batman and Robin walking down the building, that's exactly what we were doing. It's funny because I had a cousin ask me, are you crazy? Why would you do that? So 4 years later, I did it again.
You know, the TV show, they weren't walking up a wall. We know that. I mean,
exactly.
But did you really?
Yes.
Really do it?
Oh, I really did it. Wow. I really did it. And there's pictures and everything to prove it.
Wow.
That I did it, and it was really a fun experience.
Was it on a Sunday?
No, it was on a Friday when we did it. So we did it during the business day.
Yeah.
So people would be walking downtown, and you see them looking up wondering, why is that guy walking down the side of the building? Uh-huh. And like I said, it was really a fun experience. It reminded me of being at an amusement park, like being on a roller coaster ride or one of those kinds of things.
They taught you how to operate the brake.
Oh, yeah. They took you through this extensive training, which lasted about 15 minutes.
And you had a safety belt on you.
Oh, yeah. You had safety. I mean, they had professionals up there that were making sure that it was safe. And one of the reasons why I was willing to do it, because I knew the Boy Scouts of America would not do this type of event if they did not know it was safe to do, nor would the company allow someone to come down their building. So I was okay with that. But I made it all the way down to the 8th floor from that 23-story building. If you go too fast, it is set up where the lever would cause it to catch on the rope in order to stop you from moving so fast. Then the individuals at the top of the roof would have to do some little work in order to allow you to start going down the rope again. So I bet for probably close to a minute, I'm waiting and I'm just swinging on the eighth floor back and forth. And people are down just pointing. And I could tell they're going like, ah.
Did you look in the windows?
And you know, in those a lot of those buildings, you can't see in because they're tinted.
Oh, that's
yeah,
true.
You can't see. But it was a real, real fun experience. I did it 4 years later. And the experience was a little different 4 years later because I wasn't in as good a shape as I was that first time. 4 years older, little problems with my hips, little arthritis in the hips. And when I went over the first step over, I actually slammed into the wall.
Ooh.
And I'm thinking, I want to get down on this ground as fast as I can. But still, it was a great experience to have. It was a great fundraiser for the program.
Now, the headquarters for the Boy Scouts is right up the hill by the cathedral. Didn't they have a big office just north of the cathedral?
Pretty close to there.
Yeah.
Pretty close to there. There, at least at the time when I moved here in 95, there were two Boy Scout councils, one in Golden Valley,
okay,
and then one that was that is located in St. Louis. I mean, not St. Louis, in St. Paul.
Yeah,
the two councils have now merged, and as of today, it is located in St. Paul, close to Dale. I think Dale and Marshall, somewhere in that area. Yes, Dale and 94 is in that vicinity.
Yeah,
that's where it is today.
Yeah,
but the Boy Scout Council will be moving to its new location. If you're on 62 and you're right at, and now I'm having a mind blank of the military.
It's Fort Snelling.
Fort Snelling. You already see a big Boy Scout facility that is there, and we're in the process of adding on another structure to that. All of the Boy Scout programs, far as support type programs, will be located there as well as the administrative office.
And that's just a hip scopping away from the veterans hospital.
It is.
So the Boy Scouts can go over there and do their thing.
Exactly.
Help,
exactly.
Do you ever help an old lady across the street?
I've helped a few.
It is 10 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Time for a break. Our guest this morning is Mark Skipper, and he has his own business in Maple Grove, Minnesota. We'll be back and continue our conversation right after this important timeout.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
The song was very popular the year my guest graduated from high school in 1982. And it was number 5 in all of 1982. And you think you got it?
I think I know the group. Okay. I think it's Hall & Oates.
It is Hall & Oates.
I can hear the song. I just cannot think of the name, though.
Well, you got half of it right. You're doing okay.
That was an extremely popular group.
Yeah, that medical musical note was the. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. That's called The Man Eater.
The Man Eater. Okay.
Never thought, what the heck, that's a dumb name. 8 minutes before 11 o'clock, and by the way, coming up at 11 o'clock on today's 15 with the author, Terry Knight. Let's see how good you are. There you go. I'll give that to you. This is impromptu. Go ahead and read that loud. Use a microphone. Go ahead.
On today's 15 with the author, Terry Knight talks with first-time author and Northfield resident, Sherry Henry. The story is close to her heart. The book is called Good Day, Sad Day, Same Day. A Day with My Mommy Who Has Bipolar Disorder. The idea of this book originated in 2010 when she saw the ways her grandson was affected by her daughter's bipolar disorder. Sharon talks about what it took for her to write the book, including her process and her hopes for Good Day, Sad Day, Same Day. She'll be talking about the book and the story at the Northfield Public Library on February 8th at 7 o'clock p.m.
Very good. What we call cold read, where they just hand you the script and say, read it. You did very good.
Well, that was actually frozen. That was very cold. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Good for you. Okay, we got you to Minnesota. You're into the Boy Scouts. And where did you choose to live first when you came to Minnesota? And did you have your family at that time?
Not yet.
Okay.
In fact, I lived multiple places. For a few days, I lived at the Boy Scout camp. And then I moved to Indianapolis and lived there for about 6 months.
Yeah, I'm talking when you came to Minnesota.
Yeah, those are both in Minnesota.
Well, you said Indianapolis.
I'm sorry.
Minneapolis.
Okay. I keep getting that in.
I know. I did the same thing when I moved to Indianapolis.
Yeah. So lived in Minneapolis for about 6 months. Lived in St. Louis Park, Minnetonka.
Whoa.
And then eventually.
Minnetonka.
Eventually moved to Maple Grove.
All right. That's a trip, Maple Grove. My wife goes up there for their ambassador program. A scholarship program,
sure,
with young ladies.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, Maple Grove has the princess. In the Aquitennial, they have the Queen of the Lakes and two princesses.
Oh, wow.
And Northfield got Queen of the Lake back-to-back, which has never happened in 87 years. And Maple Grove and Farmington got the princess titles. And they travel all over. For example, they'll go to the Rose Bowl. And they went to the Rose Bowl, and they go to Canada and Mexico. It's a pretty big program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you, they have people that recruit for donations, et cetera. So you got to Minneapolis. Now, when did you meet, and what's your wife's name?
Well, we're not married anymore, but we actually met when I lived in Muncie, Indiana.
Okay.
And when I moved here is when we got married.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did she do when she was in Muncie?
When she actually was going to college.
Oh, okay.
So I had just gotten out of college, and she had, I believe, 2 years, 1 or 2 years left before she finished college.
Okay. So then you moved to Minneapolis, and you got married in Muncie?
Got married here in Minneapolis.
Really?
In Minneapolis.
Wow.
And 5 years into our marriage, we had our daughter, Kennedy.
Okay, Kennedy.
Kennedy, yes.
Yeah, that is such a cool name. Oh, and so you're split up now?
Yes.
Okay, so you talk about blended families at all? That occurs sometimes.
Sometimes, yes.
And what I'm wondering is, does your wife, your ex-wife, still live here in Minneapolis?
She's still in the metro area.
Okay,
yes.
So Kennedy,
my daughters,
you get see Kennedy.
Yes, in fact, weekend before last, so the weekend before the Super Bowl, she is in the process of looking at colleges, universities to attend. So we went down to the University of Missouri or Mizzou.
No,
and she
That's
went
a
there.
Good journalist school.
Yes. They talked a lot about that while we were there. And she interviewed for a scholarship to go to Mizzou. She really likes the school. We like the school. It's a great campus. Has a lot of personality to it. It has
a good program that she's looking to study in, and hopefully things will work out. And
what is she looking at?
She wants to be a speech pathologist.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
I had an exchange student from Denmark who ended up at Missouri, and he and his brother broadcast the Super Bowl yesterday in Denmark. In Danish, of course. So here's this kid that lived with my wife and I, and we used to play football at Patrika's Red Owl, and I'd pass a loaf of bread to him, and he'd slam it into the... he's such a great kid. He ended up marrying a doctor.
Okay.
And they have three children, but he and his brother broadcast the game in Danish for the Denmark. Isn't that cool?
Interesting, yeah.
2.5 minutes before 11 o'clock. And, of course, don't forget, coming up at 11 o'clock, it's 15 with the author, with Terry Knight. My guest this morning, a very interesting man, Mark Skipper, who is 5 years into his own business. And how are things going, and what is your anticipation in the future? And you said you got 50 and you want 100 clients.
Yes. Things overall are going well. We're continuing each year. We're having nice percentage increases in size of the company. I am looking to double the size over the next 12 months.
Wow.
I really see this as an opportunity to help a number of people that are looking for additional income, as well as really helping customers who want to make sure that their facilities reflect their professional image. So putting a lot of attention to customer service and supporting those that work within the company.
MAS Office Cleaners.
Cleaners, yes, sir.
That's the name of that. And the CEO of this company does don janitorial wear and go out and actually cleans physically, labor-wise.
I do it yourself? I still do around 30% of the cleaning hours a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still out there.
If dressed the way you dress, and it's not overly dressed, you look really sharp with the top coat and the three-piece suit. When I met you, and
sure,
today you're wearing another suit. When somebody meets you and they say, "Well, what do you do for a profession?" Do you say, "I'm a janitor"?
No, I don't say that.
One
of the things that I decided to do when I started this was, how was I going to go and brand my business? And I felt that most people, when they think of a cleaning company, tend not to think of someone in a suit and tie.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So that's why I decided that I would always have on a black suit with a black and white striped tie.
I see.
So whenever you would see me, you would always see me this way.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So you would always remember, oh, that's that cleaning guy.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. We have to make way for the next program on KY Men. And so thank you very, very much. I appreciated it. It was very interesting.
And I appreciate the invitation, and you made it extremely easy, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, this guy was so nervous, he called me about four times saying, "Well, what are we going to talk about? I don't know." Well, we made it. Thank you.
And thank you.
This is your radio station. We are 1080 on your AM dial for nearly 50 years, and now 95.1 FM, The One, from Northfield, Minnesota.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
My author today is a Northfield woman with a story close to her heart. The book is called Good Day, Sad Day, Same Day. It originated in 2010 when she saw the ways her grandson was affected by his mom's bipolar disorder. Sharon Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
This is a subject that most people try to avoid. while the stigma of mental illness is much less than it used to be, there's still this feeling of wariness to talk about it, as if maybe we don't want to hurt someone's feelings or something like that. What gave you the courage to not only share that your daughter has bipolar disorder, but to write a book about it?
Well, it started when I had picked my grandson up from Greenvale School. I brought him to my house, and he was having a snack. And he asked if his mom was coming home that day, because at the time she lived at my house temporarily on the weekends. And during that time, she was also in a group home and working, was able to work part-time. But he got really upset when he found out that she wasn't coming home. He started crying, and I had to turn away because I almost lost it myself. Sure. And then shortly after that, I realized there's probably a lot of kids in the same situation where the parent can no longer take care of them temporarily. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what better way to explain it to a child than have a book? Because most kids like storybooks, picture books, and I thought this would be a good way for a caregiver of that child to explain it to them so they understand what's all going on with the parent.
Yeah, and not to delve into things that are just a little bit too much for them.
Right.
The talk to us, I guess, a little bit about bipolar and how it affects the day-to-day life of those with the disorder, and then we'll get right into the book.
Well, bipolar is a chemical imbalance in the brain, and the person that has it can go from being really manic to being depressed. And when they're manic, they think they can do all these grand things that, you know, normal people, like buy a great big house or drive really fast on the road or just do kind of bizarre things mm-hmm. that normal people know are not possible. Then when they get out of the manic state,